HRNradio.com, where positive people and podcasts unite.
Welcome, you beautiful dreamers. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer. This is Robert Noss. This is the show where we affirm and celebrate the power of dreams, coincidence, and imagination in our lives. We have a wonderful guest today. Her name is Bambi Corso Steinmeier. She is a dream tracker. She has a book coming out called Dream Tracking. We're going to find out what that is all about. I must say, before we come to Bambi, I'm very aware in relation to my own dreams that, you know, I need to track in many ways. I spent part of this morning tracking some leads to elements of Scandinavian Viking era sorcery and magic and Odin stuff because of a dream from last night. And I notice I'm a tracker in a different sense. I'm often following the spoor, the footprints of the dream traveler who leaves my bed during the night and goes off to different places. I think he was in Copenhagen again last night. Not altogether sure. I have to check whether the train lines run as he was riding them, whether the mall is like that, whether the view from that overlook is like that. But I notice, because I'm conscious of traveling in my dreams a great deal. In fact, I'd say the largest category of my dreams is not the symbolic category or the literal glimpse of what's happening at a distance category. It is the experience of a dream as something playing out in another reality, in another world, which may or may not manifest in this world. So dream tracking as a phrase has all sorts of exciting connotations for me. We're going to find out what it means for Bambi. A word or two about her. She is a dream explorer. She's a dream enthusiast. You know, she tells me, and she writes in her book, that at the age of 15 she started keeping a journal. That's very good. That's great. And that at the age, about the same age, in her teens, she realized with clarity that dreaming is, you know, more than this or that. It might be an experience of another world, even a glimpse of or a participation in a life that we're leading somewhere else. Mr. Jung came to that conclusion, and I heartily agree with it. Late in his life, Jung wrote that he had concluded that we lead continuous lives in our dreams. This is my impression. So we've got lots to talk about. Bambi is trained in dream tending with Stephen Eisenstadt, who's well known at Pacifica, and she's trained in the law of attraction, and she's a coach. But above all, she is an experiencer. And, you know, you don't want to hear about dreaming from someone who doesn't do a lot of it and who fails to talk with intimate experience from what they've done in dreaming. So welcome, Bambi.
Hi, Robert. Welcome. Oh, thank you so much. I'm so excited to get to spend this next hour with you.
I'm delighted to be welcome to my own show. Why not? Great. Let's go back to young Bambi for a moment, because, of course, everybody remembers the other Bambi, who's actually a boy, not a girl. People get that mixed up.
Yeah.
They think about Disney, or they think about the childhood story. So I was very struck when I read your new book, Dream Tracking. We'll find out how to stay with that, how to track that book in a moment. I was very struck when you talked about how at 15 you took up the discipline of journaling, and it was clear to you that dreaming takes us into other worlds of experience. Talk to us about what you felt, what you knew, what you discovered at that age, and whether anything in your world supported your discoveries when you were a teen.
Okay. Well, so, you know, I think I was always interested in dreams, but I was never writing them down, and I didn't pay a lot of attention to them. I just noticed that I had them until the experience at 15, when I fell asleep in the middle of the day and awoke with a dream that was so powerful, Robert, it actually felt like it was a different life. And it was just so, it hit me at such a deep level that I realized, my gosh, there is definitely another life going on in our dreams at night and, well, and in the day, whenever we're dreaming, right? And it literally put me on a quest to start learning as much as I could about dreams. Back then, that would have been in the 70s, I could not find very many books on dreams, and mostly there were just dream dictionaries. And that was about it. I mean, there was just little bits and pieces. So I feel like I was on a lifelong quest to learn as much as I could. Eventually, over time, dreaming became much more accessible to get information on. And so that experience really, that really started this whole thing. And I'm just so passionate, and I'm so excited about our dreaming lives. So that's kind of how it started.
Well, that's good to know. And in telling us about what you discovered at 15, you've already, you know, imparted some very important knowledge. The first is that dreaming might be traveling, which is the understanding of ancient and indigenous people and the experience actually of many active dreamers today, that in dreaming we might go traveling, we might go somewhere else. I mean, that was what your childhood experience or teen experience seemed to have suggested. You've told us that starting a journal was a good idea, and I keep saying to people relentlessly, if you want to get good at this, keep a journal. I would say to people in general, and I'm a writer who's published 26 books the conventional way, I'd say your journal is likely to be the most important book you'll ever write. We're not talking just about dreams, we're talking about self-discovery, dialogue with your soul, monitoring the play of synchronicity, keeping a data log of the kind of discoveries of precognition and telepathy and so on, and so much more. You also told us that, you know, dream dictionaries are not going to do the trick. And I'll tell you, Bambi, if I'm favorite burning books, which I'm not, I burn all the dream dictionaries, especially the good ones. Especially, there are some good ones, because the problem is they encourage us to give our power away and let someone else interpret our dreams and our lives. So you've already told us a great deal. As I follow your story through your book, Dream Tracking, I notice that dreams have helped you and guided you and coached you at many stages in your life. You write about how dreams can, well, this is my phrase rather than yours, but I think it's an accurate paraphrase. You write about how dreams could be messages from the body and how dreams diagnosed an illness for you before, you know, ultrasound and medical tests revealed the disease. Do you want to talk about that kind of thing? A dream diagnosis?
Sure, sure.
Your own experience?
Yeah, so in that particular experience, many years ago, I had a very short dream. And it's interesting, Robert, because I have come to realize that dream snippets really can be even more potent sometimes than the longer dreams. And so I pay very close attention even to the really, really short ones. And this was one of those. I was standing in a hallway. The walls were pink, like a pink tile, and my doctor, who was my doctor even at the time in waking life, told me in a stairwell that I had breast cancer, or I was going to get breast cancer. And that was the whole dream. And I awoke from that knowing something that, for me, has just been a lifelong challenge, and I feel like we all come in with something, and for myself, I feel like holding things inside can certainly manifest into dis-ease. And so I realized that there was a correlation between needing to express myself and learn how to do a better job and learn how to speak better and the dream. So although I spent time working on that, it always stayed in my mind. And then about 7.5 years, I think it was, later or so, I ended up, I felt a lump and ended up going to the doctor, and at first it was not diagnosed correctly, and I knew intuitively, Robert, that something was wrong, and I trusted my instinct. I pushed harder the next year and then ultimately had an ultrasound and a biopsy, and it did turn out to be breast cancer. So I feel like dreams have such an ability to not just diagnose, but also to kind of follow us along our life path and inform us about things that could happen, might happen. They provide us the ability to make different choices or better actions on behalf of ourselves. But there's just such a guiding force within that and an intelligence that runs through dreaming. But that was certainly one example of that.
Well, let's talk about that just for a moment. I mean, 7.5 years before you go to the doctor, did you do anything at the time of the dream, or did you just let it ride? Did you just put it in your memory bank and carry on? Did you see a doctor or do anything else because of the dream around the time?
Yes, I did. And I think it's always good to check things out in the waking life circumstance when you have a dream like that. It doesn't hurt just to check, and I did. But there was nothing.
There's nothing at
there
that time.
Nothing.
So, but when the dream started to manifest, your knowledge from the dream that this was serious and needed to be pursued, that carried you through and prepared you for a diagnosis beyond the initial faulty diagnosis. So it gave you guidance and counsel and strength and persistence when you needed it, right?
Oh, absolutely.
One of my closest friends, whose breast cancer was really diagnosed by a dream in which her father in a white medical coat, her deceased father, turned up and yelled at her, "You have cancer, get to the doctor." She was guided the same way. She went to the doctors right away. They couldn't find anything. They ran the test. She said, "Do them again." One can laugh now because it's 30 years later and she's doing fine. But when they found what was going on, they found a rapidly metastasizing form of breast cancer, which could have killed her within a year. So I'm just making the comparison in my mind that the initial tests were, you know, were negative, but she knew she had to persist. And some people would say, well, isn't this negative wish fulfillment? You're wishing on yourself. I don't think so. I think that, as with you, I think her dream gave her the guidance and the clarity to go on. And just very briefly, a few years ago, I'm in that drifty state between sleep and awake. You probably spend a certain amount of time there too, right? Hypnagogic zone. Is that one of your zones of dreaming? That time in that in-between state?
Oh, sure, yeah.
So I'm in that in-between state. I spend a lot of time there. In fact, some of my richest experiences take place in that liminal state. So it's the hypnopompic zone. I've been awake for a while. I'm lying in bed, and I'm drifting. I'm up on a high rooftop, which is one of my favorite locales in dreamlike situations for getting a view, a perspective on life. And there's someone up there, and I think, oh, this is, you know, that slightly higher self I sometimes meet. And no, it's my dad, my father, who died more than 30 years ago. And I'm shocked to see him, not because he's dead. We've had a very good relationship since he died, but because I know he's made a certain choice and we haven't been in contact for long. And immediately I'm in front of him. He touches my upper lip. He says, "Go to a doctor and have that checked out." So I go to I call the dermatologist the same day. It's a spot of skin cancer, a spot of basal cell carcinoma. Easy to deal with if you have it dealt with, but although I had what I thought was a sort of mole I'd cut shaving for a while, neither I nor my general practitioner paid any attention. So it took my father, or some people would say a dream messenger wearing my father's mask, to get me to the doctor and get something done. And when I had the surgery, I raised a glass of single malt whiskey. He was a Scottish soldier. And I said, "Thanks, Dad. Here's to you."
I mean,
what we're talking about is pretty darn important, isn't it? I mean, this stuff can save your life. And it could also give you course correction and guidance on the roads of life. One of your dreams that I singled out to talk about when I read your book is one in which you find yourself on a dangerous, unstable bridge. Do you remember that dream?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hello?
And they'll certainly...
I just lost you, Bambi. I can't hear you. Did you do something
I'm
funny,
sorry.
Or did I do something funny?
No. Can you hear me now?
I can't hear you at all now. You've sort of gone away.
Uh-oh. Hold on a second here, Robert.
Okay, well, it's broadcasting fine. And I'm beginning to hear you again, but I'd like to hear you. There is a dream you tell in which I think you're on something like a rickety, dangerous bridge. Do you remember that dream?
I do remember that dream, and trying to get across there and wondering how that's going to work and if it's going to be...
I'm going to prompt you, since, you know, I'm such a full-service interviewer.
You know,
I saved it. Here we are. I'm going to quote you, Bambi. "I had a dream," says Bambi, "in which I'm walking across a very unstable bridge held up only by wires and cables. It's blowing back and forth fiercely in the wind and rain. In my dream, I'm holding on to dear life, trying not to fall off the bridge into the choppy, freezing cold waters below and desperately trying to make it to the other side." And then you say, "This image spoke to my feeling that I was not on solid ground in my life and that I was in the middle of a transition in which I felt unstable, cold, and alone." So this is a dream I was thinking about, and what it leads, I mean, it's interesting to look at how dreams show us the roads, of our life roads in various dramatized ways. But the real thing I wanted to talk to you about around that is a practice that you and I both appear to follow. I know I follow it all the time, and you seem to also, which is to compare the situation and behavior of your dream self with your waking self and see if there is some lesson to be learned and some counsel to be derived by doing that. So talk to us about that.
Oh, yes. Oh, gosh, I see that so... I mean, I see it so much in my own dreams and in the dreams of others. And I think this is where it really pays off to know your own imagery and also just to develop that kind of a relationship with your dream life, because... the settings in the dream, the actions in the dream, can be so telling about where we actually are, right? They're like this symbolic story that kind of represents something and holds up the mirror for us to look at it and get the reflection about where we're actually at, because sometimes I don't know that we're always even conscious of that, you know? Dreams always bring that back to our attention by this kind of imagery. And like you said, keeping track of things like that and what's happening in the dream, and even the way I write my dreams in present tense, I've always found that that helps me to identify situations that I might not have been conscious of, you know, instead of writing in the past tense, which can sometimes be easy to do, but bringing me into the current reality of the situation.
Yeah, you have me looking at my dream report from this morning, and it's all in the present tense also. Apart from, it's all in the present, it has four, I'm not going to go through it all now, don't worry, but it's quite detailed. it's all in the present tense, except when I am hearing and looking in on a story from another place and time that is being recounted and looked at inside the dream. That's in the past tense. So in the strange version of a Scandinavian city where I actually get lost for a while in my dream, I'm writing in the present tense. But when the mysterious story of three Kabbalists and their rivalry and the sorcery done between them is being told, we slip into the past tense, because that's a story within the dream, a dream within the dream. It's a very interesting phenomenon of dreaming. Sometimes our dreams are nested like Arabian Nights or something like that. Sometimes we see dream within dream within dream within dream within dream. Mm-hmm. Okay, so your book is called Dream Tracking. You're not allowed to take a breath. She writes it as one word, dream tracking, and you're a dream tracker. So what is dream tracking anyway? What do you mean by the phrase dream tracking?
So the idea for dream tracking is the fact that we're on an exploration. It's an investigation. It's a discovery of working with our nighttime dreams and seeing how those leave clues and signs for us to work with in our waking life. And in dream tracking, I really try to weave the waking world and the sleeping world, because one always is informing the other. So part of it is, you know, there's a little bit of working with the visible and the invisible world at the same time. And so I have found in my own experience that dreams leave these figurative footprints in your dreams. And this may be the image of an elephant. This may be the image of an earring, you know, whatever it is, that these are little clues and these are tracks into the unknown to see where you are being pulled in your life. Or, you know, what is of your own becoming as it shows up in imagery in the dream. So I use the idea of tracking something as a way of really learning how to use all of the senses as part of keen observation, to pay attention to not only just the dream image, but how do I feel with the dream image? How do I feel writing it? Is there a body response to it? How do my eyes react? How do my ears respond? And trying to really bring a different type of mindfulness around dream work that expands it. One of my favorite quotes that I put in the book, Robert, is by the artist Isaiah Zagar. And he says, "I'm not searching for an answer so much as I'm searching for encounter. I'm searching for the mysterium tremendum, the awe-inspiring mystery in everything." And in dream work, I feel like, you know, dream tracking to me is more about that. It's more of an encounter and an experience than it is trying to, what I call, capture a dream and put an interpretation on it so that it could never be more than just that one interpretation. Tracking opens it, right? So that you're constantly being informed even by the same dream. You know, so I try to open it up into something much larger. And also to, you know, you mentioned it earlier on in our conversation, that indigenous part of ourself that is connected to everything. I feel like so much of our waking life is, we have the ability to be informed by the natural world. And when we make that the focus, different things happen and different things manifest in our life and more open.
Right. Okay, we're talking to Bambi Corso Steinmeier. You can find her website at Bambi Corso, Bambi like the deer, B-A-M-B-I-C-O-R-S-O, Bambi, BambiCorso.com. She has a new book on its way to delivery, to you maybe, called Dream Tracking. I read it, I like it, I gave an endorsement. And she's beginning to explain to us what dream tracking means for her, and as we're hearing her correctly, she's talking not only about tracking what goes on in the night or in the day during your dreams when your eyes are closed, but tracking with all of your senses, the dreamlike symbolism, the signs, the patterns of synchronicity in the world around you. So this is Way of the Dream with Robert Noss. We'll be back for more after the break.
Like what you hear? Tell your friends. Thanks for listening to HRNradio.com.
We're carrying on with Way of the Dreamer. Our guest is Bambi Corso. She has a book coming out called Dream Tracking. You can find out about that at her website, BambiCorso.com. And you might want to go over to my website, MossDreams.com. You can see a number of things I'm doing. You can read about my new book, Growing New Dreams. You can see all the sort of new online programs I've been doing in this pandemic era. I'm currently doing a short online course for the Wonderful Alternatives in London, which is not too late for you to sign up for. Anyway, we're talking to Bambi about all the gifts of dreaming and how you need to do more than look in a fuddy-duddy way at a dream symbol and try and interpret it. You need to be ready for adventure. You need to be ready for adventure. She has some nice quotes in her book, and one that I wrote down is from Martin Buber. He says, all journeys have secret destinations of which the traveler is unaware. All journeys have secret destinations of which the traveler is unaware. I love this thought. And it's confirmed for me in my own dream travels and the dream travels I'm privileged to facilitate and to support in those who study with me. So, Bambi, tell us about one of your dream travels, one of your dream excursions. You say that at midday in your teens, you discovered you were leading another life in another world somewhere else, and that hit you with force. What are some of the dream travels you've experienced since? Are there places, environments you find yourself often in your dreams? Do you track, you know, the movement from one scene? Do you feel sometimes it's a continuous story? You're returning to a certain kind of scene or situation again and again?
Well, I don't travel as much as I'd like to, actually.
This is the time for dream travel. We can't travel much in physical reality. This is the time to get out there and dreaming.
Exactly. The one dream that we were talking about when I was in my teens, I was in another time. It was about 200 years ago, I would say, and I was a Native American chief in the dream, and I was watching over my tribe, and a fire broke out in the caves in which we all lived, and the dream kind of took me in through this whole experience of trying to save the tribe, and one person, which was one of my sisters, actually ran deeper inside the cave, and I couldn't leave her behind, and I went running in after her, and then it was a fast forward to a now time, and I was a spirit, and I was still in the cave that was, you know, all ashy and spider webs had totally grown over, and I was watching people walk outside that were modern day people walking to the area. So that was one example. And I actually had a really interesting experience. This was many years ago, Robert, where I dreamt it was the 1920s, and I was just out on the streets walking around. There were all these people dressed in 1920s clothing, and in the dream I met a woman with a very specific name. And over 20 years later, and I never forgot the dream. You know, sometimes something stays with you, you know. 20 years later, and this was actually during the whole breast cancer time, I actually met a woman with that exact name. And as it turns out, there was a connection, kind of a lineage with this woman who I had originally met over 20 years ago in a dream.
Okay.
So those are two examples of being in different times. And different kinds of things happening.
Well, those are fascinating. I was actually looking for something more. I was looking for maybe the experience of a continuous life or a sequence, an event track in your dreams in which you find yourself again and again, perhaps in a parallel life or another setting or in London in 1920 or whatever. Maybe that's not your mode of dreaming. It's always been mine. And I do say to people, whatever their mode of dreaming, one of the great things about dreaming to know right now is dreaming you can travel without leaving home. You can travel. That's as social as you like. I mean, there are no restrictions. I'm traveling every night, and Bambi, I teach far more in the night in my dream than I do in the day. I'm leading workshops somewhere every night, because there's one thing that I do, and I love it. I mean, last night I was leading a workshop in, I think, Copenhagen, the Scandinavian city, and other things from beyond that possible alternative thing were going on. So I'm fascinated because we all have different styles of dreaming. I mean, that's part of my mode of dreaming. Part of my mode of dreaming also, because I'm a bookish character who likes to do research. I'm a former history professor, as you know, and former investigative journalist.
Yes.
So I like to research my dreams. So if I get odd words... Hello?
Hi, Robert.
Well, the call just dropped. I don't know why.
The
texture came into play. Maybe I was getting overexcited. Maybe that does it. Maybe the old sun leaping up and down and getting excited. Anyway, one of my modes of tracking dreams is I love to do the research. You probably remember Jung said somewhere in Memories, Dreams, Reflections that he has interesting thoughts all day long, but he takes up in his work only that to which his dreams direct him. I am the same. I'm fortunate. I've been an independent scholar for most of my life, as well as everything else. So I have 14,000 books in my house. I have Google, and I will just follow my dreams wherever they lead. I mean, I had to learn the Mohawk language because my dreams, for example. And although I'm not a cheerful linguist like most Anglos, I did it. So I enjoy that. I enjoy that aspect of dream tracking. But I want to lead you to something that might speak to everybody, which is how dreams can be a voice of conscience, a way of restoring our inner compass, even a source of course correction. I want you to think and tell me whether there's been a moment in your life, in addition to the early diagnosis, when a dream might have given you clarity and put you straight on something you needed to understand, which in your waking mind you hadn't yet understood. It's a moment you can think of when a dream gave you some kind of counsel in the sense of course correction, sort of saying, go this way, not the way that you think you need to follow. Does that happen to you?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I had I was working, many years ago, I was working for a company, and I was actually a co-founder of the company, and the person that I was working with, there had been just a bunch of challenges, and I was finding myself just not happy, not healthy, exhausted all the time, and really in a lot of turmoil often. And I had a dream about a bus. And I don't remember all the details, Robert, but I just remember that I had to get off the bus. I had to get off the bus. And it was falling from the sky, as I recall. And so I did something to get off the bus as the bus continued to fall. And the course correction in that is it really brought to my attention the reality of my my job not being good for me, not bringing me joy. And from that point, I really got serious about trying to figure out my next step. And so that was a huge course correction. I mean, again, it was a short dream, but there's something about the dreams being able to also hit us on an intuitive level. So you may not always understand the imagery, but you understand the feeling. And so often that feeling is an intuitive hit or an instinct that helps push you in a particular direction. And that's what happened to me.
What color was the dust that was falling out of the sky?
It was yellow. It was like a...
It was yellow. Okay. All right. No, that's what I was writing this morning, thinking about recurring themes in my dreams about not just yellow buses, but yellow trains, yellow forms of transformation. So actually, I perked up my ears. I mean, if it's a yellow bus, on the one hand, I'm sympathetic, because that might be a school bus, and it's telling me the dream is about life school, right, learning a lesson.
Right.
You no doubt pick that up. On the other hand, in general, I don't like buses because they're collective transportation. They make all sorts of stops that don't interest me. So in general, I don't want to be on the bus. But in any case, if it's falling out of the sky, I'd better get the lesson fast, as apparently you did. So it's a great example to tell people. falling out of the sky, you better make a different decision pronto. That's a very good example. That's a very good example. Thank you. A very good teaching example of what we want to help people understand about the dream bus, the dream school, and what it can give us. We're talking to Bambi Corso. We're talking about dream tracking, which is also the title of a book she has coming out. This is Way of the Dream with Robert Maus. We'll try to stay connected after the break.
The Bright Side of Talk. HealthyLife.net.
All right, you're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Maus. Our guest today is Bambi Corso. She's a dream tracker. She has a book called Dream Tracking coming out. And she talked with some fervor about something I agree with completely, which is that the dream fragment, you know, the vignette, the breadcrumb from a dream, is sometimes really very interesting to explore. Sometimes it's an in-your-face message, like an example she gave us. Sometimes it's something mysterious, but teasing at it, twinking at it, will bring something out. So I just said to Bambi, I might give you one of my own dreams for you to discuss with me, the way that you would approach a dream, and we'll see how you do it. And I was trying to look at a report that is fragmentary, simple enough, because I tend to write, they're not confused. I break them into scenes with titles and so on. But I tend to notice and record quite complex experiences, often operating on several levels, sometimes several parallel narratives interplaying at the same time. So, Bambi, here's a dream I'm going to give you, and I'm going to read it to you just as I wrote it in my journal. It's very, very, very short. Are you ready for it?
Okay. Yes,
so
I'm ready.
This is from a month ago. It's the shortest report I could buy. It's about five lines. And I gave the dream a title. That's part of my practice. And the title is, The Answer is Veined Cheese. Veins like veins in your hands or like streaks in the cheese. Veined cheese. And here's what I wrote. I lay down wondering whether I would dream into the theme of ancestral healing that is central to my work today. So that's telling you the intention to me. And then the report says, the strongest image that stays with me is of a large piece of cheese, striped and stippled in many colors. I would call it veined rather than marbled. Not with all the colors of the rainbow, but perhaps with all the colors humanity wears on its skin. I stayed with the image and tasted the cheese. It's soft and crumbly and quite delicious, blending flavors of Stilton, Derby, Cheshire, farmhouse, cheddar, and more. So this is my dream. And I came out of the dream sort of licking my lips and having tasted the cheese and feeling really happy. So how would you approach...
Wow.
I don't know how you feel about cheese, but how would you approach a dream as cheesy as I...
Oh, I love that dream. Oh, and I can see the visual of it, too, and your telling of it. Gosh, I mean, the first thing, if I were looking at this, the first thing I would do is ask you, I know you said that it was delicious, but what were the emotions attached to the dream?
Oh, absolute delight. I do like cheese, and, you know, being of Anglo-Australian upbringing, I like all the typically English cheeses, and these are typically English cheeses, which we also have in Australia when I was a boy and I lived in England. So it also brings a sort of whiff of nostalgia. It brings back, you know, the enjoyment of having these cheeses in the country where they're produced, in the country where they're best known. And as I say, my intention was focused on ancestral healing and connection with the ancestors. So I guess, in a sense, I connected with my own ancestry and the nature of the cheeses that are blended in this way. But very, very positive, happy feeling.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. So do you recall, I mean, if I were doing this in a regular dream tracking, I would ask if there were any other recent images that were repetitive. Did you have any other dreams of cheese lately or colors
I was about to say I don't remember. I do. I remember one. And by the way, I drew both of these. Both of them are very strong visual images. They're colored images. I did a picture of the
veined
cheese. It's very delicious. And some months before, I dreamed that I meet a man who's wearing a cheese on his head. And it looks like those silly cheese head hats they have in the sports fans have in Wisconsin. And he's wearing a cheese on his head, and he's got a child, I think, playing as if he's in the pirate ship on top of a sort of triangular cheese on his head. And in the dream, that was a caution. I'm not going to shake hands. I've got to keep social distance. There's a warning about Wisconsin and the pandemic and keeping away from cheeseheads. So that's slightly different. That's not exactly, a yummy cheese that you want to eat. That's a caution about a situation in our world. So I wouldn't necessarily lump the two together. But to answer your question in a more general context, I'm constantly doing work on different world traditions, and I've recently led some online courses involving ancestral European traditions, and I looked a lot at the role of the cow goddess in Northern and Western Europe, not just the cow goddess Hathor and so on, but the cow goddess who licks the first humans into existence, or the first life form into existence in Norse mythology, for example. The cow goddess is an aspect of Bridget in Ireland, and the offering of milk and cheese in a sacred way in these traditions. Mm. So in some ways, my mind goes to the sacred aspect of it, the cow as a goddess. Of course, that's well known in India and other places too, but particularly in the Europe of my ancestors, and the offerings of cheese and milk as part of a sacred ritual.
Ah, that's beautiful. I'm really struck by the fact that you said there were all the colors of humanity also, and it feels like there's a blending of some sort going on, and perhaps, with all the different types of cheeses coming together, and some with the ripples and some with the lines and the different colors. Have you ever made cheese?
No, I've never made cheese. I cook very little in the kitchen. I cook just a few dishes. I've never made cheese. It's a short.
Okay. It feels like such a bit of ancestral way of doing things, and what it takes to create the cheese.
I could see this cheese actually being made. I could see this blend. I mean, as I say, I drew it. It's actually one of my better drawings. It's very simple, but it does show the vein cheese with all the colors, and it looks good enough to jump off the page.
Hmm. And the title of your dream...
The answer is veined cheese.
Veined cheese. I wonder, what I get curious about on that is the veined cheese and the ancestral healing, and it makes me think of DNA passed down through the generations, the DNA of our ancestors, the bloodlines.
Yes.
And the fact that there's all different types and colors and flavors and places that type of cheese was made and how it all comes together.
Yes. Yeah, that's homing in very nicely. I did not think about the phrase vein cheese. I just wrote it. I knew that was the phrase. It was only after I did that I thought, well, this is pointing towards the bloodlines, isn't it? But also towards the ideas, not just the bloodlines of one genealogy or one sequence. It's all the bloodlines of humanity, in a sense, being connected.
Right. Right. Oh, it's such a beautiful dream. I'd love to see the picture.
Well, if you go to my we are Facebook friends. If you go to my Facebook page and go to my albums, you'll find my album of dream-inspired drawings, and you'll find the picture there. Actually, I can probably send it to you to simplify your search.
Okay.
I'll send you the picture of the veined cheese. Now, Bambi, we have one segment left. I don't know whether you're up for this, but if you have a dream report you'd like to share with me after we have the break and you've had a moment to think about it, we could do a little dream work my way. Would you like to do that?
Oh, I have a little snippet.
Great.
And get your,
well, let's hold off until after the break so we don't get cut off halfway through.
Okay.
I agree with the artist you quoted about us looking for an encounter rather than analysis for interpretation and looking for the great mystery. Both of us also look at the world around us as a waking dream and look at signs and symbols and more gravitation and law of attraction and all of that. I must say that I'm more inclined to interpret the world around me in the light of my dreams than to interpret my dreams in the light of the world around me. Does that make sense? Makes an unusual sense. My dreams illuminate
what I perceive and what I look for in the world around me, more than my ordinary associations illuminate my dreams. In other words, for me, because I suppose I have an unusual life, starting with being thrown into the dream world at age 3 when I was pronounced clinically dead, for me, the dream world is the home world. And sometimes what I'm living in my dreams seems to me more real, not less real than ordinary life. And in this time of pandemic, when most of us are shut up at home or nearly so, this is more important than ever. So you're talking to someone whose home ground is the dream world. That's how I've been since at least I was 3 years old. And it does mean that you look at things from a slightly with a slightly different tilt. This was not exotic for some of our ancestors and for some indigenous people. When I first heard about the Kogi, I heard about a people who kept their mamus, their shaman priests, identified in dreams, separate from the sunlit world for the first 14 years of their life, so they would never confuse physical reality with the real world of the Aluna, the real world of dreaming. When I learned about them and then met their envoys, I felt I had an analog for my own strange upbringing. All right, that was just to pace us out towards the break. After the break, we're going to have the pleasure of hearing Bambi Corso Steinmeier, Dream Tracker, work with me on one of her dreams. You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Noss. We'll be back after the break.
Lighting the way with positive energy and love. HRNradio.com.
Corso Steinmeier, you can find her at BambiCorso.com. Look for a book, Dream Tracking, which will be coming out soon. Bambi's offered to share a dream report with me, and we'll see where that takes us. You ready, Bambi?
I'm ready, Robert. So this is just because the dream itself was really long, but there was one piece of the dream that really stood out, and I just had this on November 14th. There were multiple pieces of the dream, but this one really, really struck me. I'm out in a New Mexico desert type of location, and all of the ground is, it's really red, like that beautiful red rock that you would see in Colorado or in New Mexico or Taos. And I'm in a house, and there's a woman here with me, and I'm walking through an area of it by myself, and there's all these windows. One of the windows points out towards the red desert, and then there's another one on the other side pointing in the other direction, and then there's, I think, one in the back of the house. But as I'm looking around, I look out one of the windows, and I see this massive shadow fly across the land. And then I see another one, and I realize whatever it is, there's two of them. And for a very brief moment, I see a really large gray bird. But then it's gone, and what happens is I go back to the window to look closer, the window that's pointing towards the red desert, and this massive, massive-sized black raven is almost just, you know, frozen there. But he's in flight, but he's not moving his wings. He's just there looking at me, and I'm looking at him through the window, and his size is just like dinosaur size. He's huge. And he has a pierced beak, like there's a ring, like, you know, what, like you would see in an indigenous type of a marker in his beak. And we're just having this moment of looking at each other through the window. And I'm just so in awe. And that's that portion of the dream.
Wow. So what's the title for this scene?
Well, this one I had called The Mythic-Sized Raven, Teepees, Elephants, and Plants because of the other pieces, but for that
What's
part...
What's the title just for the scene that you gave us?
The Mythic-Sized Raven.
Okay. What are your feelings around this? Your feelings then and your feelings right now? Your feelings around the dream?
Oh, just incredible awe. I can't believe what
okay.
I'm seeing.
Okay, that's a good word.
Yeah.
Reality check, do you know this landscape like this? Do you know the raven? Does this relate, or is it familiar to you in any part of your life?
You know, raven, we have them where I live. I see them all the time.
Okay.
But I'm always reminded when it comes to raven of one of the native stories about carrying the fire stick to the sun, that
right.
it used to be a rainbow
right.
bird.
Is it possible that the dream could play out literally or symbolically in the future, either, for example, that you find yourself in that red landscape, or that the raven, maybe as a mythic ally, maybe as a shamanic ally, will turn out to be important to you?
Oh, it's absolutely possible on both.
Okay, so what are you most curious about?
Oh, Gosh, trying to understand the visitation, I think.
Okay.
Let's
move into the effort. I'm sorry to have rushed along. I just don't want us to run out of time because this is our last segment. So if it's my dream, which is the way I like to talk about things, if it were my dream, I saw the raven before you mentioned it because I was transported to a scene at the house of a friend in the Southwest many years ago, and there was an enormous raven sitting on his fence, and that friend was on his way to death through cancer. I was working with him. And we chose the raven as an ally to help him get ready to make his journey through death because ravens are very good at that. The other thing that made it incredibly contemporary for me, contemporary like right now, is I spent the night, both in dreams and research, on North Scandinavian research. And, of course, we know about the raven for Native Americans, but the raven is also the bird of Odin, the shaman god of the North. And he has two ravens called Thought and Memory. And these are impeccable allies in tracking in the older sense. In fact, I lead a two ravens tracking journey, shamanic journey, Bambi, to get people to recruit the sight and the flying ability of the twin ravens in order to travel across time and travel into realms of death and dying and sometimes prepare the road of the soul for people approaching death. So I'm incredibly juiced and excited by the dream, and if it is mine, I'm going to assume that I've been shown this scene and this powerful bird, these birds actually, I saw two at one point, and ravens actually operate in pairs. They do operate in pairs, not just Odin, the shaman god with thought and memory, but ravens live in pairs. I'm going to be prepared to invoke the raven and borrow its keen sight and flying ability in my work to help people approach the deeper journeys of life and perhaps in particular approach the mysteries of death and dying with courage and grace that active dreaming, that active oriented dreaming can bring you. So is there any action you might now take to honor the dream? For example, do you have a raven talisman? Do you have anything that represents the raven in your life right now? Might you find something like that?
I drew the raven.
Yes.
Yeah, so I did that kind of to honor the dream.
Yes. Well, that's great. I have a stuffed toy raven with the recording of its voice, which I carry in my drum bag.
Oh,
so I can just whip
that.
It out and make the correct croak without having to figure it out. I might want to do something more now that the dream is alive and fluttering around us. Something more with raven, you know, ASAP, because, as I say, this is an impeccable tracker and particularly powerful in going to dark places. And, of course, people tend not to know this, but the raven is also the bird of Apollo, god of light. There about the white raven that becomes black because of a certain history, like in the Pacific Northwest. So you brought us the energy of a mythic ally and you've seen in a dream, and you reminded us that one of the functions of dreaming for those of us who are open to a deeper life is that in dreams, greater powers can find us. Greater powers can find us because we're outside the tame confinement of the ordinary mind, where greater powers can come and seize us. And it's great to be seized by a greater power and a greater story. All right. This is Way of the Dream with Robert Mouse. We'll be back with Bambi Corso just for a few moments after our final break.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Right, you've been listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Mouse and our guest today, Bambi Corso Steinmeier. Her website again is bambicorso.com. Look for her book, Dream Tracking. If you don't have it already, go get my book, Growing Big Dreams, and go over to mousedreams.com and look at the short online course on growing your big dreams. I'm leading for alternatives in London right now. That might be calling you. Bambi, thank you so much for sharing your enthusiasm for dreaming and your skills as a dream tracker.
Oh, thank you so much, Robert. It's just such an honor to get to spend this time with you and to share dreams. Really love it.
Okay, well, let's say to Bambi and to everybody listening, may you grow big dreams and may they manifest in your world. All right, until next
time,
may your best dreams come true and may you remember them.